Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan. Today we have a theme program of sorts. It's about quiz show-type programs. We're going to start off with Information Please. And this one's interesting because it features Boris Karloff and John Carradine. This is from 1942. And then following this, we will have an episode of Truth or Consequences. This is called Suspended Over a Water Tank, and we'll throw in one or two other things too. So enjoy.
It's half past eight. Half past eight.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike offers you a panel of four experts, an MC, and a lot of questions and answers. You furnish the questions, and our experts try to answer them. For every question used, Lucky Strike will reward you with $10 in defense stamps. If the question is muffed, you get a total of a $50 defense bond plus the 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information Please. Now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight as ever, Information Please proceeds in its spontaneous and happy-go-lucky manner. Our board of authorities includes two of our regulars, Franklin P. Adams and John Kieran, plus a couple of ghouls who at the present moment are trying hard to hypnotize your master of ceremonies, possibly with some success. They are first John Carradine, one of Hollywood's very best menaces, and Boris Karloff, the veteran bogeyman of the films and now number one blood curdler in Arsenic and Old Lace. And by the way, Mr. Karloff, since we have had to announce that you were scared to appear on Friday the 13th last week, you're curdling much less blood in this country than you were before. You realize that your reputation is practically zero at the moment.
I made a mistake, Mr. Fadiman.
You mean you should have appeared?
I meant the 20th.
Oh, you're scared? Now, see if we can make that come true, Mr. Karloff. Suppose we start with a question from Paul Rosenbluth of New York City. In deference to our monstrous guests this evening, we start off with a question about victims of one sort or another. You're going to get two out of three on this if we can. I want you to identify for us a victim of treachery, in fact or in fiction, who, in this first case, was shot in the back of the head. The victim of treachery who was shot in the back of the head. Mr. Karloff?
I think that would be Jesse James.
It was Jesse James. Who shot him, Mr. Carradine?
I did.
Yes. We've never had it more pleasantly explained. What was your fictional name in the play, Mr. Carradine?
Bob Ford.
Robert Ford, yes.
A dirty little coward.
That's the fellow.
Mr. Howard.
We want
Jesse James in his grave.
Yes, we want to have as much friendly badinage, Mr. Adams, as we can on this program. Also, Carradine is a darn sight bigger than you are. Mr. Karloff, have you, in the course of your grim career, ever done any backstabbing? I don't mean on this program.
Never.
You never have?
Never.
Much more virtuous than you are, Mr. Carradine. How about this one? A victim of treachery who was killed by a treacherous letting of blood. His blood was let. Mr. Carradine.
No, I beg your pardon. No.
That isn't in your biography, eh? Mr. Karloff, doesn't it appeal to you?
Yes, it does. I wish I'd thought of it.
Well, this is the famous story of Robin Hood. Remember when Robin Hood was ill at the end of the book? He was put in the care of a prioress who was really his enemy, and she slit his veins and just let him bleed quietly to death, a very affecting death. That was the death of Robin Hood. Not a bad notion, eh, Mr. Karloff?
Fine.
Yeah. Now, in this case, the victim was killed with a poisoned rapier. Killed with a poisoned rapier. Mr. Kieran.
Well, that was Hamlet and Laertes, both.
Hamlet and Laertes, both of them killed with a poisoned rapier. Very good. Mr. Carradine, you were going to say the same thing, I have no doubt. That gives us two victims out of three. How about this one from Irwin Fisher of Baltimore? We ended with a Shakespearean reference. Let's start with another. Now, I'm going to give you situations from three Shakespearean plays. You are to quote from the famous speech made in each case. I'll explain each case. Now, this is Act 3, Scene 4 of Hamlet. Hamlet is showing his mother the picture of two kings, and he's comparing them. What does he say? Mr. Carradine.
See what a grace was seated on this brow.
Yes.
My Pyrrhon's curl, the front of Jove himself.
That's very good.
I like Mars to threaten and command.
Very, very good. Amazing repertory, Mr. Carradine. Hope Hollywood's listening in. What were you going to say, Mr. Adams?
Same thing.
Same thing, yes.
Less well.
Mr. Kieran.
I can go on from there for a couple of lines.
All right.
A station like the Herald Mercury, new lighted on a heaven-kissing hill. Is that all right?
A dandy. How's that, Mr. Carradine?
Oh, it's fine. Okay. A combination of the form, indeed, wherever a god would seem to be. Shall we just go on with the play?
Yeah, we better get off Shakespeare sooner or later. How about Othello? In this case, Iago is discussing Cassio's character with Othello, and he hesitates at besmirching Cassio's name. Do you remember that? What does he say? This is in Act 3, Scene 3. Mr. Kieran.
Who steals my purse steals trash?
That's the famous speech, yes. Very good. How does it begin? There are a couple of lines before that. Remember it, Mr. Carradine? I thought you had your hand up there. Good name?
Good name of man or woman, dear my lord, is the immediate jewel of their souls. Who steals my purse steals trash.
I would like to explain to the listening audience that Mr. Carradine is not reading from a book. The next one from Act 2, Scene 1 of Macbeth. Now here Macbeth has just dismissed his servant, and he waits for the bell as a signal for his foul deed. Mr. Carradine had his hand up at once.
He says to the servant, "Go bid thy mistress. When my drink is ready, she'll strike upon the bell. Get you to bed."
Yeah, I don't want. I don't want the whole scene.
After the scene, he says, "Is this a dagger which I see before me? The handle toward my hand.
Come, let me clutch thee.
I have thee not."
Yet I see thee still.
Thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Adams,
I know my cues.
You certainly do. How about this one from W.H. Boggs of St. Louis, Missouri? Under what circumstances, again, either in fact or fiction, were these remarkable deeds performed? Yet 3 out of 4. Now, this first deed, in this first deed, 7 were killed with one blow. Under what circumstances? Mr. Adams.
I think that's in the Grimm's fairy tales.
The Brothers Grimm?
The Brothers Grimm.
Like Carradine and Karloff?
A tailor.
Yes, a tailor.
Flies.
Yeah, flies. He made everybody believe they were men. Mr. Karloff, were you into
anything? I was about to say that.
Going to say that, yes.
In fact, that was the name of the story, Seven at a Blow.
Yes, that's right, Mr. Carradine. Still here? We've left Shakespeare, you know, Mr. Carradine. How about the one who killed 40 in a row? What are the circumstances under which that wholesale assassination was committed, Mr. Karloff?
I think that was Ali Baba and the 40 thieves when they were all in jugs.
In jugs, yes. And who did the killing?
Somebody's girlfriend, if I remember rightly.
Well, I don't know. Don't pull a Winchell on us. Mr. Carradine?
Well, I can't remember her name, but she was the servant to Aladdin's brother.
Servant of Ali Baba.
Upon the death of his brother in the cave.
Yes, servant of Ali Baba. Wasn't Morgiana? Was that the name? Yes. How did she do the trick, Mr. Karloff? Did you say that? Perhaps I wasn't listening.
No, I didn't.
How did she do the killing, Mr. Carradine?
Poured hot oil on them as they were waiting in the jars to get out and surprise Aladdin in the middle of the night.
Yes, yes. I wish I could reproduce Mr. Karloff's grin. Very good. And now we have someone who killed 25 Germans single-handed and captured 132. Mr. We have three hands on that. Mr. Kieran.
Well, that was Sergeant York.
Sergeant York and the famous Argonne. In 1918. How about someone who killed 116 Japs single-handed, to bring this thing perhaps a little more up to date? Killed 116 Japs single-handed. Does that come back to you, gentlemen? Well, it's a famous story that's appeared only recently. I think I'll have to give it to you.
Well, wait a minute.
Mr. Kieran?
I've forgotten what Tom Trapnell now. He blew up bridges of Bulkley, decorated for work out there.
Well, you've named some of our heroes, but
Colin
you haven't
Kelly
named this
was
one.
A third one.
Shall I give it to you, Mr. Kieran?
You'll have to, I guess.
Captain Arthur W. Wermuth of the 57th Filipino Scout Regiment is responsible for the death of 116 Japs on Bataan Peninsula during the fighting going on there and is probably still at it, we hope. Well, that gives us 3 out of 4, I think. How about this, gentlemen, from Mrs. Catherine Stroop of Boston? This is naturally coming from Boston, a much more cultural question. Get 2 out of 3 if you can. Can you quote the line in which each of these repeated words occurs? Give us the whole line. Keeping time, 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 Mr. Adams.
In a sort of runic rhyme.
Good enough. It's from what poem?
The Bells.
From The Bells. Poe's
E.A.
Bells.
Poe.
Can you give us a couple of more lines after that? Keeping time, time.
In a sort of runic rhyme to the tintinabulation that so musically swells, and so forth, I am no boy to tell a whole play.
Yes. You'll find, Mr. Carradine, that Adams is pretty subtle on this point.
Oh, take note of bitterness anywhere.
All right, here's another set of repeated words. Riding, riding, riding. Mr. Kieran.
The highwayman came riding, riding, riding over the purple moor, I guess.
Yes, came riding under several different circumstances, mm-hmm. up to the old inn door. Mr. Carradine, that came back to you, too.
Go on. He had a bunch of lace at his throat and a white cocked hat in his head.
What do you think of that, Mr. Adams? He's tough. Now, here's a hard one. Those two were easy. Come, come. That's all I'm going to give you. Give me the whole line. Come, come. That's a tough one, Mr.
Well,
Carradine.
That's a lyric from a song by Victor Herbert.
Sure.
I know.
How does it go?
Come, come.
I love you only.
My heart is true. I want you only. I long for you.
Well, at least you're not singing it. That's something in your brain.
You don't know.
That's very good. From The Chocolate Soldier. And there's a Shakespearean tag beginning with come, come, too. Mr. Carradine, this may be the only line you don't remember from Shakespeare. Mr. Kieran, does it come back to you? It's from Hamlet. The queen says, come, come, you answer with an idle tongue.
Go, go, you question with a wicked tongue.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carradine. Give him an inch and he takes a mile. How about this one from Mrs. J.A. Patrickin of Alston, Massachusetts? By the way, you gentlemen have not been stumped yet, and it irks me. Who, in fact or fiction, was the famous child or family of these couples whose first names I'll give you? Get 3 out of 4. Jolyon, J-O-L-Y-N, J-O-L-Y-O-N, Jolyon and Anne. Famous child or family of that couple, Mr. Karloff.
Soames Forsyte?
Well, you have the right family. You've got the wrong man, I think. Soames was the grandchild of them, I think. What was the Forsyte family?
It'd be young Jolyon Forsyte.
But the progeny of Jolyon and Anne were 8 in number, I believe, and they were Jolyon, Swithin, Timothy, Nicholas, Roger, Esther, Anne, and Hester. I guess that makes 9. And they were the famous Forsyte family, the older generation. How about Elzire and Oliva? E-L-Z-I-R-E and Oliva, O-L-I-V-A. I may be mispronouncing those names. I hope not. Does anyone know the famous family produced by that couple? Gentlemen, they are the parents of the...
Oh, yes, Dion.
Very good, Mr. Kieran, yes. That's a Dion quintuplet. They also are the father and mother of a number of other children who, I believe...
About 19.
Well, more or less. less known to fame. Now, how about Henry and Anne? Famous child or family, Henry and Anne. Produced, gentlemen, Mr. Carradine.
Take a little guess. Couldn't be Edward VI, could it?
No.
Son of Henry and Anne?
Queen Elizabeth.
Queen Elizabeth, yes. Have to mark that wrong, though. Mr. Adams had it right, but a little too late. Queen Elizabeth, Henry VIII, of course, and Anne Bullen. Now the famous child of Mrs. Jumbo. Mrs. Jumbo? Mr. Adams?
Dumbo.
Yes. By the way, Mr. Adams, where is Mr. Jumbo in this? I have no Mr. Jumbo listed on my card. Do you have any information as to Mr. Jumbo?
I have, not on this program.
Very well. next one from Anna Harrison Nelson of Kansas City, Missouri. Want you to name for me, if you can, gentlemen, 3 things which can be approached but never reached, as an example. An echo, I suppose, might be put under that listing. Something that can be approached but never reached. You may use your fancy on this, Mr. Adams.
0 and infinity.
Well, you can reach 0, can't you?
You can reach 0. Infinity is, for example, the place where parallel lines meet.
Yes. I suppose that would be true. Infinity is something you can approach but never meet. How about another, Mr. Carla?
You approach 0 as a limit if you divide, keep on dividing an integer and keep on dividing.
And keep on dividing. Yes, that's right.
But you will never approach 0.
That's true. You will approach it, but you will never reach it. Well, let's generalize by saying any mathematical limit.
The theory of limits.
Isn't that called absolute 0 that you can't approach? And that's the correct name?
I think it is.
Just plain 0.
Carradine. Very good. We'll take absolute 0. Mr. Karloff, do you have another one?
I was wondering if he had in mind Miss Garbo.
Well, it's very possible that Miss Garbo is not the only one that Mr. Adams can approach but never reach. I'll take Miss Garbo, Mr.
Thank
Carla.
You. If you can get her.
Mr. Kieran, did you have a congregation
in your brow? Sunset
and
dawn.
Sunset, that's very poetical. How do you mean that exactly?
Well, you can approach sunset or you go toward it.
Walking toward it.
You can't ever get
I suppose
to
that's
it.
True.
Same for dawn.
Mr. Carradine?
The end of a rainbow.
Oh, yes.
Pot of gold.
Yes, pot of gold, sure. End of a rainbow.
The horizon. Bottom of a live
the
volcano.
The horizon. Mr. Carla, what were you saying?
I was going to suggest the extreme bottom of a live volcano.
What a nice idea, yes. The extreme bottom of a live volcano. Well, that gives us a half a dozen things that can be approached but never reached. And so far, Lucky Strike has paid out no $50 defense bonds, and that means no sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, Mr. Cross, emulating the figure of justice, places fine tobacco in one scale and smoking enjoyment in the other.
Yes, Mr. Fadiman, and I find that they're in perfect balance. The better the tobacco, the better the smoke. That's because in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. Fine tobacco gives you mildness, better taste, more smoking enjoyment all around. For this reason, the makers of Lucky's consistently pay the price to get the finer tobacco at market after market. For example, at auctions in Lumberton, North Carolina this season, the American Tobacco Company paid 31% more for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 31% above the average market price published by the United States Department of Agriculture. So it goes at market after market, and the best tobacco we buy goes into Lucky's. The result is Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Mr. Fadiman, doesn't that fact speak for itself?
Mr. Cross, it says a lot and says it fast in just 52 seconds. And now we'll go on with a question from Kathleen Joyce of Detroit. This is about ants, A-U-N-T-S, famous ants of literature. I want you to name an ant who married an ant. An ant who married an ant. Mr. Kieran.
Charlie's aunt.
Yes, that's right. Charlie's aunt did marry an aunt. I think only in the moving picture version, though, in the play version.
I don't remember it in the play, but...
Did you see Mr. J. Benny?
Yes, I did.
In the movie version, well, there, he who plays Lord Pancart Baberly does marry his Spanish, the Spanish aunt, doesn't he? That's
right.
Quite right. How about an aunt who was also her nephew's mother? I believe that's perfectly clear. An aunt who was also her nephew's mother. A little bit mixed up, I know. Any idea?
I mean, it was his real mother, not acting as his mother.
She wasn't his aunt. She was just an aunt, wasn't she?
She was an aunt of his. Not just an aunt generally, but his own aunt. In other words, the nephew's aunt was also his mother. I'll make it clearer. I'll say the nephew's mother was also his aunt, Mr. Adams. Now, does it come to you?
Nope.
It's,
well,
Mr. Kieran?
Is that in David Copperfield?
No, I don't know how to make that up. Well, now, come. It's Gertrude in Hamlet. Isn't his aunt also
That's
his
right.
mother?
That's right.
She marries his uncle and therefore becomes his aunt.
Well, and she's also his stepmother.
Yes, she's also a stepmother. She gets three salaries, which is contrary to equity ruling. That's right. Well, I have to count that wrong, gentlemen.
Well, she's not really his aunt.
Oh, yes.
No.
Yes, and when he gets tired of calling her mother, he can call her aunt.
Aunt is one's father's sister.
Not necessarily.
Sue Shakespeare.
Oh. And let's know how you make out, Mr. Carradine. How about an aunt who announced she was in town? An aunt who announced she was in town, Mr. Adams.
Aunt Jemima.
And no less, yes. What was Aunt Jemima's slogan?
Eyes in town, honey.
That's very good. Yes. Well, that gives us two aunts out of three. Now, how about this? This is from Richard Kelly of New York City. It's about famous slaves. Who is the famous slave of each of these masters? Prospero had a slave, Mr. Carradine.
Caliban.
I had three or four hands up on that. I guess we all knew it. Agamemnon had a famous slave. Agamemnon. Ah, not so many hands this time. Mr. Kieran.
Briseis?
No, I think you're thinking of... Briseis was the slave of... What's
slave.
His name?
Well, in Cressida?
No.
Well,
no.
I give up. Oh, wait a minute. No,
have
go
to count
on with
you
the
wrong.
Show.
Cassandra. Cassandra was given to Agamemnon as a slave. Remember that?
Wasn't she the daughter of one of the kings?
She was the daughter of one of the daughters of Priam.
He wasn't in those days.
She had 50. Pardon, Mr. Carradine?
She became a little more than a slave to him.
Yes, she did become a little more. But she worked her way up, Mr. Carradine. She began as a slave.
Mr. C is kind of plain spoken.
How about a famous slave of Augustine Sinclair? Mr. Adams.
Uncle Tom.
Uncle Tom, yes, very good. Mr. Kieran had his hand up, too, on that. Well, we got two slaves out of three. Now, how about this from Mrs. L.A. Sander of St. Paul, Minnesota? Get three out of four. It's all about spiders. No doubt favorite pets of Mr. Karloff and Mr. Carradine here. Can you identify the spider who tried to be companionable? Well, that's Mr. Karloff.
The spider with Bruce.
Oh, nothing companionable
King Bruce
about...
of Scotland?
Nothing companionable about that spider, I shouldn't think.
Well, he used to let himself down on a thread to visit him, and that sort of encouraged Bruce to try to escape.
Yes, Mr. Adams?
The spider attempted to be companionable with the celebrated fly.
Oh, I think you've all got the wrong spiders, to my mind.
He asked him to walk into his parlor, and nothing is more companionable than that.
Now, Mr. Adams and Mr. Karloff, you are going to mess up this question between you in a way which you could drive me nuts. Mr. Carradine?
Why, the spider who got very companionable and sat down beside Miss Muffet.
Yes, you are aware of Miss Muffet, Mr. Adams. That was the one, the spider who sat down beside Miss Muffet. Mr. Carradine, will you please answer all the rest of these? Now, identify the spider that persevered and saved a nation. Mr. Karloff?
That's my chat with Bruce.
Yes, that's right. Now you're all right, Mr. Karloff. That's right. What was the story, Mr. Karloff? Remember it?
The spider used to let himself down, and the thread would break, and so he'd try again and try again and try again, and that gave Bruce the idea of trying again.
Yes, that's right. And he was successful in doing what? What was Bruce's aim?
He freed Scotland from England.
Yes,
a good stab at
after the seventh time, the seventh try.
Yep.
Now a spider, gentlemen, that tried to be hospitable. Mr. Adams?
That's my friend.
A friend for each of you boys on this program this evening, yes. That's the one who walked into my parlor. Will you walk into my parlor, so the spider to the fly? Who wrote that?
Anon.
I don't remember.
Anon.
Was it our old friend Anon? I'm not sure. Now, who was called?
I think it was
a real person.
Actually authored by somebody.
I think it was,
name
too,
escapes me.
Escapes me, too. A double escape. How about this one? Who was called a bottled spider and a bunch-backed toad? Have two hands. Mr. Kieran?
Richard III.
Richard III. Very good. Who called him that?
Well, I'll give that to Mr. Carradine.
Mr. Carradine?
Margaret called him that.
How many lines do you want to give us, Mr. Carradine?
I'll let it go at that.
All right. That gives us three spiders out of four. By gollies, we've got all our answers in the first part of that question. Here's one from P. Joseph LaManna of Brooklyn, New York. And gentlemen, if you don't mind, I should like to lose a $50 defense bond before this evening is over. Here are some questions on hanging, gentlemen, just to introduce a note of cheer into you. What shall, quote, neither night nor day hang upon his penthouse lid? Close quote. Question mark. Mr. Kieran.
Sleep.
Very good, Mr. Kieran. That's not a very well-known quotation. What's it from?
That's what I'm trying to think of right away.
Macbeth.
That's
right. The witch's sentence.
That's
very good. Want to say any more, Mr. Kieran?
No.
All right.
I'm not a witch tonight.
How about this? What is hanging breathless on thy fate? Mr. Adams.
Union.
No, it's another abstraction.
It's a ship of state.
That's the reference. But what is doing the actual hanging, Mr. Carradine?
Humanity. With all its fears, with all its hopes of future years.
Yes.
Is hanging breathless on life.
Yes, that's very good. Mr. Carradine, what's the name of the poem that you're quoting?
Mr. Kieran?
The ship of state, I believe.
No, that's we sort of
the
think
ship.
Of it as that. The building of a
the
ship.
The building of the ship.
Yes. That's right.
By build me ago. Straight, O worthy master. You want any more of that?
Yes.
Sugar?
And gentlemen, finally, who hung by his nose up above? Who hung by his nose up above, Mr. Kieran?
The man on the flying trapeze.
Very good. That's right.
I thought he hung by his knees.
No, he hung
by his nose.
Hung by his nose.
Anybody can hang by
with
his knees.
The greatest
knees.
Of knees, you're thinking.
That's three hangings out of three. A little jocular this evening, Mr. Adams, huh? How about this
nothing
one?
Nothing for me.
How about Albert Morland? Morland's question. This comes from Montreal, Canada. Identify these kings of fact or fiction. Now, the first was a ship's captain who was called King Tom. King Tom, a ship's captain.
Mr. Karloff, was that your hand going
yes,
up in that ghostly way?
Yes. From the outcast of the island.
Would you
Joseph
stop snapping
Conrad.
Those bones of yours, Mr. Karloff? Beg pardon.
His name was Lingard.
Very good. Who was Captain Tom Lingard?
He's in The Outcast of the Islands by Conrad and in Alma's Folly by
yes.
Conrad.
Is he in The Rescue, too?
And in The Rescue.
And in The Rescue.
But years later.
Yes, very good. That only a omnivorous Conrad fan, I think, would get. Mr. Carradine, would you care to quote one of the novels of Conrad for us? How about the king who owed his throne to a girl? Owed his throne to the efforts of a girl. Mr. Karloff.
King Charles of France owed
yes.
his throne
to whom?
To Joan of Arc.
Yes, to Joan of Arc. Very good. She got the dauphin crowned as Charles VII after the Siege of Orleans. Very good, Mr. Karloff. And how about the king who slid down the banister? King who slid down the banister, or Mr. Adams?
That was in The King's Breakfast.
It was in The King's Breakfast. Could you give us a line?
By Alan A. Milne.
Yes. Mr. Kieran, does it come back to you?
Yes. King asked Queen and the Queen asked the dairymaid, how about some butter for the royal slice of bread?
You haven't got him sliding down the banister yet,
oh.
though.
Yes. Certainly
nobody
the King said.
Said.
Nobody said as he slid down the banisters.
Nobody,
nobody he said, could call me a fussy man.
Something
but
like
I
that.
Do like a little bit of butter with my bread.
Absolutely. Well, I couldn't stump you on that one, gentlemen. Now here's a question for Mr. Cross. Why is it worthwhile for everyday smokers to follow the advice of tobacco experts?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's because the independent tobacco experts down south watch each sale at the auctions. It's their business as auctioneers, buyers, and warehouse men to scrutinize and examine the leaf. And because the sales take place on the open market, they see just who buys what tobacco and the prices paid. That's why their overwhelming preference for one cigarette, Lucky's, means a lot to you as a smoker. For at market after market, these experts see us pay the price to get the finer, milder, better-tasting tobacco. For example, at auctions in Brookneal, Virginia this season, the makers of Lucky's paid 26% above the average market price published by the United States Department of Agriculture. At Aberdeen, North Carolina, 35% more, and so on all over the South. The result is Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Smokers, it's clear that in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. So surely it's worth your while to smoke the cigarette that has won the overwhelming approval of the independent tobacco experts, Lucky Strike.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. I can quite truthfully say this evening that Lucky Strike has cheerfully paid out no $50 defense bonds and no sets of the encyclopedia. Thanks very largely to the brilliant supplementary efforts of our two monsters this evening. Whom, by the way, Lucky Strike wishes to thank, Mr. Karloff, the villainous Mr. Karloff, and the no less villainous Mr. Carradine, for being so villain this evening. Now, next week, our three regulars, Levant, Kieran, and Adams, will be on deck, and we'll have as our very extra special guest the distinguished literary figure, Emil Ludwig, whom you'll all know as the biographer of Napoleon, and as perhaps soon to be known as the author of the forthcoming book, The Mediterranean. Remember, for every question that's answered correctly, the sender gets $10 in defense stamps, and for every question that stumps our board, you get a total of a $50 defense bond, plus the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica.
D-U-Z, D-U-Z.
Put Duz in your washing machine. Take your clothes out bright and clean. When you Duz your wash, you'll sing. D-U-Z Duz everything.
Hello there. We've been waiting for you. It's time to play Truth or Consequences. Yes, Truth or Consequences, the show that does everything on the air, brought to you by Duz, the soap that does everything in your wash. And here he is, the only fellow who knows who Miss Hush is for certain, your Truth or Consequences man, Ralph Edwards.
Thank you, Harlow Wilcox. Hiya, Harlow.
Hi,
you're looking fine. Chicago agreed with us, didn't it?
Yeah.
Greetings, party players. Here's something else I know for certain. Right down the wash line, does everything. So does all your wash every wash day. So here we go with the fourth week of telephone calls in the 1947 Miss Hush contest for the March of Dimes on Truth or Consequences. So far, we've found out that Miss Hush is not Elsa Maxwell, Maud Adams, Spring Byington, Sister Kenny, nor Tallulah Bankhead. Now, before we list the giant jackpot of prizes, Let's hear from Miss Hush herself, the well-known Miss who is mystifying America, and try to learn her identity through the all-important riddle which she recites each week. Now, here she is from somewhere in the United States, Miss Hush.
Second for Santa Claus, first for me, 13 for wreath, 7 for tree. Bring me an auto, a book, and a ball, and I'll say Merry Christmas in spring, not in fall.
Who is it? In a moment, we'll make our first phone call to try to identify Miss Hush. First, let's listen to the list of prizes in the giant Miss Hush jackpot. All this to the winner. A 1947 Buick Super Convertible from the Howard Automobile Company. A Bendix Home Laundry with washer, dryer, and automatic ironer. A round-trip ticket for two via United Airlines to Honolulu. And a suite of rooms for 2 weeks at the Matson Lines Royal Hawaiian Hotel. A $2,000 Columbia house trailer, completely equipped. A $1,000 diamond and ruby Bulova wristwatch. An RCA Victor radio phonograph combination, plus a new 1948 RCA Victor television receiver, and a library of 100 Red Seal records. An I.J. Fox $1,500 full-length beaver fur coat, and an all-metal Luscombe Silvair airplane from Dallas, Texas. $2,000 in cash. A $1,000 Popular Mechanics home workshop with a library of Popular Mechanics instruction books. A Servelle silent gas refrigerator. Sherwin-Williams Cover the Earth trademark paints will paint your house inside and out. A Hart Schaffler and Mark suit and top coat for every adult man and woman in your family. A Tappan gas kitchen range and a 13-cubic-foot Jacobs Home Freezer, product of Jacobs Wind Electric Company, Minneapolis, filled with bird's-eye frozen foods. Our first phone call right after our first consequence. Now, our first contestant tonight is going to be a gentleman by the name of Mr. Dalton, whom we sent into a dressing room during our warm-up period to put on a bathing suit. He's now in that bathing suit behind the curtains here, suspended over a giant water tank. Pull the curtains, boys, and we want to meet Mr. James Dalton. There he is, and he's perched over the water tank. How you doing, Mr. Dalton?
Just fine, thanks.
Oh, man, that's some hot perch you're on, isn't it? Yes, sir. That'd be a good view to watch the football games, wouldn't it, from up
Lovely.
There? Yeah, did you listen to football games today?
Yeah.
No time to be listening. USC probably will play Michigan now, you think, maybe in the Rose Bowl, huh?
Probably.
Oh, man, if they do, why, of course, they'll be exclusive over NBC. All right, now, Miss Frances M. Bradford, it will anyhow, you know, whoever plays. Miss Frances M. Bradford of Tacoma, Washington, wants to know, isn't this something? You come out dignified to a program, now you're in a bathing suit hung over a water tank. Everything's under control up there?
Just fine.
I mean, you know, you're not dizzy or anything?
No.
Nosebleed? Airmail from Kansas City hasn't come over, anything like that?
No.
No, good. You're pretty high. What did the boy oyster say to the girl oyster? Truth or consequences, Mr. James Dalton. What is your occupation, sir?
I'm a salesman.
And where do you live?
On Loma Drive, 507.
I mean, you live here in Los Angeles, eh?
Yes.
We didn't know where to send it. We didn't want to care when to send the body. It's just where we wanted to know where. Oh, the time's up, for goodness sake. I say, what did the boy oyster say to the girl oyster? Do you want to take a guess? No. All right. Your pearls are like teeth. Did he say that? Oh, he should have been shot. Well, you haven't told the truth, so you must pay the consequence. Now, Mr. Dalton, whether or not you are dunked in the water tank below you depends upon what is said in the next few minutes in some house in the United States. Now, we've hidden a microphone in somebody's home somewhere in the United States. We also have asked a neighbor lady to drop in and start a conversation about husbands with the lady of the house. Now, each time anything unfavorable is said about husbands, you will be dunked in the water tank, Mr. Dalton. You still with me up there, huh? Huh?
Lovely.
Lovely, lovely. Okay, here we go by remote control to somebody's house in the United States. And remember, if the lady of the house says anything unfavorable about husbands, you get dunked in the water tank. Okay, take it away.
Oh, yes, but be sure not drop the ashes on me.
Well, that's all right. Just put it over here, that's fine.
By the way, where's your husband tonight?
Oh, he told me he's downtown.
Well, I'm waiting for John to call. He said he was going to take me to a movie tonight.
Oh, they give me a pain.
Dunk him! What are you doing, Mr. Dalton? Huh? How you doing, all right?
It's a little chilly, though.
Yeah, a little chilly. Yeah, we warmed it especially for you. The lady said the husband's give her a pain. Let's listen in. Listen.
Oh, John means well. He brought me flowers yesterday.
You know, the long-stemmed roses. I could hardly find a vase long enough to fit them. My husband never thinks of those things.
Dunk him again! Let him go! Oh! She apparently doesn't like husbands, huh, Mr. Dolan?
I don't guess so.
Your husband to come and meet some of our friends.
On a Sunday?
Well, yes.
Oh, you couldn't get my husband out of the house on a Sunday if you put a fire.
There it goes again! Let it go! Let it go! Oh, man, we dumped the whole stage with that. Pull him up. All right, better tune him out over there, Johnny Pollock, for a minute. How do you feel, Mr. Dalton? Yes, my, oh, my. I guess whoever lives in that house doesn't think much about husband. By the way, do you know whose house that was?
No, I don't.
It was your house, and that was your wife talking. It can be, and it is, brother. Do you believe it? Do you believe it? Do you believe it? Huh? No. It was your house. Incidentally, your wife was in on the gag. She wants me to tell you she really loves you and thinks you're swell. But this is Saturday night, and you do take a bath on Saturday night anyhow, don't you? All right, here's a 72-piece set of fine art sterling silver for your home, Mr. Dalton, and for your wife, we have here a copy of a book entitled Our Husband's Necessary. It's a nice little book. Please give your neighbor lady this 14-carat, 21-jewel bull of a watch. Thank you, Mr. Dalton. Go back there and get dried in the dressing room. Your clothes are there. Wonderful guy. Oh, yes, you will also get this big red box of Doug's. And believe me, folks, that's the prize of them all.
Hey, tell them why, Ralph. Tell them Doug's is one soap that really does everything in the family wash.
Yeah.
From the roughest and toughest to the whitest and brightest.
Okay, Harlow, I will. Folks, Doug's is...
Tell them how just a short washer run with Doug's gets greasy black work clothes spanking clean.
Yeah.
Streaked up towels dazzling white.
Right, right. You know, folks, just...
Hey, Ralph, be sure to point out the real wonder of Doug's. This same hard-working soap is actually safer for the newest, brightest colors you wash.
Yes!
That's where Doug's is different from any other leading package soap sold for wash day. Even makes more suds, ounce for ounce. They're real soap suds, too. Don't forget that, Ralph.
Oh, I won't. They're real soap suds.
Believe me. There's no shortage talk, folks. There's no substitute for Doug's. It's moving out of the stores so fast these days, Ralph. You'd better tell everybody. First chance they get Doug's.
Look, fella, why don't you tell them what Doug's does on wash day, huh?
Oh, you've already done that, Ralph. All I can say is Doug's does everything.
Oh, you really think I did a good job, Harold?
You were great, Ralph. Wonderful.
Oh, thanks awfully. Thanks a lot. And now, stand by, America. I'm going to call the person who gets first crack at tonight's giant jackpot consequence. This is the person in our radio audience who gave us, in this week's contest, the best reason why we all should support the March of Dimes. Now, hand me the phone, please, and I'll place the call. Hello? Put the phone up to my ear here for a second, will you, Al? Hello, operator? Yes, get me San Diego, California, please. Right down the coastline here. Yes, indeedy. Hello? Hello, San Diego. Our NBC operator will give you a number in San Diego to call. Will you please ring it? Give her the number, please, to call Billy Clevenger. Just a little table to put that on, Al. Attaboy, I've got to get the telephone here and everything. Oh, me. Miss Hush is not Elsa Maxwell, Maud Adams, Spring Byington, Tallulah Bankhead, or Sister Kenny. Hello? Oh, hello. This is Ralph Edwards of the Truth or Consequences program. Yes. How are you? Is this Grace Hutton, Hutton, of 4349 Altadena, San Diego 5, California? Is it Miss or Mrs.? Mrs. Well, the rules say the writers of the best entries must be available at the telephones, and you are. Your entry on why we should support the March of Dimes was selected as the best entry tonight, so you get an opportunity to identify the voice of Miss Hush. Now, I suppose you know what you win if you do know the identity of Miss Hush. Can you use the prizes? I'll bet. All right, the big question, and you can give only one answer. Tell us who you think is Miss Hush. Here's hoping, she says. You say Miss Mary Pickford. You say Miss Mary Pickford. I'm sorry, Mrs. Hutton. Mary Pickford is wrong, but don't let this discourage you from trying again next week in case our second and third calls tonight are incorrect, too. You'll try. Bless your heart. Thanks, Mrs. Grace Hutton of San Diego. You're wonderful people down there, and you sound like a truly
wonderful lady. Thanks for your contribution to the March of Dimes. You've aided a great cause. Good night. Good night. Wonderful lady. Same as can be all these people. Two more calls yet to be made. Let's have some more consequences first. And later on, you again will hear the voice of Miss Hush, and I'll tell you how to become eligible for the giant jackpot of prizes. If you've entered before, enter again. A new contest each week, just like the lady said. Hello, how are you?
Well,
come on up close. Come on up close. A nice married couple here, and looks like you have the situation well in hand, Mrs.
I'm scared.
You're scared? On the QT?
On the QT.
Come here, I got news for you. I'm not, so don't worry about it. Come on, right in here. Hello, Mr. Godfrey. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Fine. What's your occupation?
I work for the Burland Shoe Stores. I'm an assistant manager.
Oh, that's swell. And Mrs. Godfrey, you're home taking care of the house?
I'll say.
All right, Mrs. Godfrey. And Mr. Godfrey, Mrs. Ivan H. Hansen of Helena, H-E-L-E-N-A, Oklahoma, says about this question, when it's born, it flies. When it's alive, it lies. And when it's dead, it runs. What is it, truth or consequences? From Oklahoma. Oklahoma, where the sun...
Say it again.
By the way, truth or consequences... I will say it again. When it's... say it again?
Yeah.
Oklahoma, where the sun...
No.
Oh, I think... when it's born, it flies. When it's alive, it lies. And when it's dead, it runs. What is it? I just wanted to say that truth or consequences will broadcast from Norman, Oklahoma, Saturday, December 6th. That's the Saturday after next for the Veterans of Foreign Wars. Look out, Oklahoma. Here we come. Norman, Oklahoma. Sir?
A skunk.
I beg your pardon, sir. Oh, that's your answer. Mr. Godfrey, you say a skunk.
Yes.
No, nor any other name. It would be as wrong. A snowflake. When it's born, it flies. It's alive, it lies. When it's dead, it runs. You
that's
haven't
right.
told the truth. What's that?
That's right.
It's right, Miss Godfrey?
Yes.
Thank you for checking me because I wasn't sure. I'll be frank with you. I didn't know. It's okay, huh? Good. All right. Well, you haven't told the truth, so you must pay the consequences. Come in closer, folks. I just don't seem to be able to get... We got so many phones here on this Miss Hush contest. Ooh. You think it'll be guest or not?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know.
You'd like to know. Oh, boy. Are you celebrating Thanksgiving at home this year?
Yes, we are.
Mrs. Godfrey. Is the family going to have Thanksgiving dinner with you? You're going to have it alone, or is there a family, or what?
They're all away.
Let's get cozy about here and find out about the family. Where are they? Away? Who's what?
I always got one at home.
I see.
A little monster, 3 and a half.
Oh, I got 3 little children at home.
Little children, yes. Children,
well,
yes.
Who's away?
Bill and then Elaine. We have Elaine and a son-in-law.
How old is Elaine?
About 22, I guess.
How old is Bill?
Bill's 19.
Where's Bill?
In Las Vegas.
And where's Elaine?
Elaine's in Chicago with her husband, and they have a little baby.
Oh, a little consequence.
Grandpa.
Wonderful, mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, I guess there are a lot of children living here, so you're spending it alone. Is that the idea,
right.
Ms. Godfrey? I guess there are a lot of children living here.
And I'm cooking, too.
Are you cooking? I'm Methodist. Good to see you. I guess there are a lot of children living here who are unable to visit their parents in other parts of the country. So, for your consequence tonight, we would like you to go into the busy halls of NBC here, where many people are milling around. You know, there are a lot of people come to see The Life of Riley, and a lot of shows are on here tonight. And invite any young couple that you meet to spend Thanksgiving dinner with you. Would you do that?
As
are they others married or not? I mean, are they both the boy and girl married?
No.
Well,
Elaine.
All right, then Elaine is married. All right, you get a couple to substitute for them. Would you do that?
Yes,
just
yes.
All right, and off you go now. And when you find a couple, Al Pascal, Ed Bailey, one of the boys, take you off there and to find Phil Davis. Just look through the halls, Phil. There's bound to be a young couple. And when you find a couple who will accept your invitation, bring them back here. We'd like to meet them. Will you do that, Mr. and Ms. Godfrey? Just bring them back on here. And we go on the crantle side and round stand. They go on, they can't hear. Ooh, what's going to happen to them? Now, they don't know it, but the first couple they'll meet wandering through the corridor, hurry them up because this is going to be fast. Through the corridor of NBC will be their own daughter and son-in-law, completely disguised. We contacted Mr. and Mrs. Godfrey's daughter, Elaine Baker, and her husband, Herb Baker, and had them flown here secretly from Chicago, Illinois. I'll tell you how after a while.
Well, don't go away, because next on CBS Radio's Comedy Time are those two zany characters of many characters, Bob and Ray. And now Bob Elliott and Ray Goulding present the CBS Radio Network.
Hi again, everybody, and welcome back to Bob and Ray Show. You here in the studio audience, you're going to have an active part in today's show, we might point out. And those of you at home, we hope, will participate mentally, so to speak. Communicate with us some sort of way.
Do you want me, Blue Eyes, to take the microphone now and go down into the studio audience?
You're calling me Blue Eyes because
you want me, Blue Eyes.
And what kind of color eyes do I have? I have to look at my driver's license all the time to see. Kind of brown, hazel, or... You don't much care, right, audience? Okay.
They didn't give us much reaction to that. But I am going to take our portable microphone down now, and we have a very interesting question, I think, to pose.
Him.
To some of our guests.
Not him.
No.
Me? Would you like to talk with me?
I think maybe you'd be fine.
No, me.
Let me have him. He'd be good. I tell you, have your name, sir, before we go any further.
You mean my name, my real name, or the name that I use at hotels?
Well, whatever name you care to give us.
Ford Frick.
Mr. Frick, our question has to do with the visit by Mr. Khrushchev to this country. He still has a short time remaining on his visit. In fact, right now he's on his way, I think, to Pittsburgh. We thought maybe in the last few days, you people would have some suggestions on places he should see.
Well, I think he ought to go up and talk with that fellow that's been on your program, that Lawrence Fechtenberger. He's been out in space and everything. I think it'd
be... Oh, that's just a story. Lawrence Fechtenberger is a figment of our imagination.
Oh, well, I thought... Well, I feel like a perfect chump.
Well, that's all right. How about this fellow sitting next to you? Do you have any ideas about what he should see?
I don't know. I suppose maybe he ought to see Yankee Stadium.
Well, that might be something good. He's been to San Francisco.
This year I had wonderful luck with my tomatoes. Maybe you should look at those. The big beef kind. Look, they're about that big around.
That's good size.
I think he'd be impressed with it.
He's seen quite a lot of agriculture, I think, and maybe places of historic interest might be better.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, you had something more to say?
Well, I thought maybe he could be taken over to one of those wig makers they have in New York. You know, like a lot of those actors that are bald?
Yes.
They come out looking like they got a big head of hair.
Yes, I know. Well, he's aware of those things. How about you, man? Do you have any ideas about the subject?
Well, I don't rightfully know what he should see.
Because he doesn't have too much time left to...
No. I think he ought to maybe see Pittsburgh. I think...
Well, he's going to. He'll be there tomorrow, I think.
Oh, really? That's what I would suggest you'd see, Pittsburgh. It's a nice city, and it's heavily industrialized.
Yes, well, he'll get a kick out of that.
Yeah.
One more person. How about you, sir?
Well, I think you got to see Al Morningside. This a bus driver I know.
Why is that?
Well, Al, he doesn't give an inch in an argument.
Uh-huh.
Now, you should see him in action on his bus. If a passenger gets smart with him, wham, I mean, really.
Sounds like a real crowd pleaser, isn't he?
Well, Al's something on wheels. No kidding. Al could straighten him out in a second. He does it all the time, both on and off the bus.
Tell me, is Al equipped to refute Marxian dialectics?
Oh, no, it takes about a second before he gets bored with talk.
Mm.
And then wham. I mean, he's a real plain guy.
Well, where can we find Mr. Al Morningside if we want to call Mr. Khrushchev's attention to him?
He lives at the Pacifist Club.
All right, so thank you very much, and I hope that Mr. Morningside doesn't flatten you for giving out his address. Back on stage now.
Nice going, Blue Eyes. Did a great job down there. And now, friends, get ready for a commercial message.
Hola, amigo. You want to know about stereo phonographs? Listen to my last bullfight on ordinary stereo. Olé! But now, Colombia Stereo 1. Ah, there is a corrida de toros. Real lifelike, magnifica. There is such a big difference in stereo phonographs. With most, all you get is a couple of speakers shooting in different directions. But with Colombia... Ah, hombre, you get fantastic stereo projection. What it does is to send circles of sound sweeping through every inch of a room. You are surrounded with live sound, live feeling, live passion. Ole! Ole! How they cheered me. Ask your Columbia phonograph dealer to demonstrate Stereo 1 by Columbia. Prices start as low as $39.95 for portables, $129.95 for consoles. El Picador! Who let the bull out?
This is Public Lawyer. Episodes dedicated to the selfless conduct of those who serve the best interests of the public. Court-appointed attorney Vernon Stitz is such a man.
Now, how do you plead, prisoner? Guilty or not guilty?
Well, I don't know.
Do you have benefit of counsel?
No. You see, Your Honor, I don't have a lawyer, to be honest with you.
Well, every man, woman, and child is entitled to the fullest protection of the law. Now, there are several court-appointed attorneys here in the courtroom. Would one of you please step forward to advise this man?
I will.
I can't see too well from here, but I suspect that that eager voice belongs to Vernon Stitz.
Maybe I'd better go it alone and take my chances, Judge.
No, the law is a complex thing, Mr. Flowers. I'm calling a 10-minute recess here so that Mr. Stitz can familiarize himself with the details of your case.
I appreciate that, Your Honor.
Now, would the prisoner please step forward?
Prisoner just stepped forward, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counselor. Now, after having conferred with his attorney, how does the prisoner plead?
Just a minute, Your Honor. I've advised Mr. Flowers not to plead guilty or not guilty either.
Well, I hope you know what you're doing, Counselor.
Your Honor, I'm willing to take the risk. There is a precedent for all this. The State versus Cosmo, October 1928. If the good judge will look it up, he'll find that Victor Cosmo pleaded neither guilty nor not guilty in October of 1928.
Well, if it's a legal duel you want, my hot-headed young friend, you'll get one. I was the presiding judge on that case, and the reason Mr. Cosmo didn't plead one way or the other was because he was hit by a truck before the trial and became deceased.
Judge, I think I'll go it alone. I don't want the court to do me any favors with three attorneys, especially this one.
Well,
Your Honor, I'd like to ask for a recess.
On what grounds, may I know?
Some new evidence has come up that'll be of interest to this court.
Counselor, there hasn't as yet been a trial. I haven't seen any kind of evidence.
Exactly, Your Honor. We're dealing with the pre-introduction of evidence before a trial, a totally new legal concept.
Oh, get out of here, Stitz. That's ridiculous.
Ha! That's just what I've been waiting for. An outburst from you, Your Honor. I move that this case be thrown out of court because of pre-trial prejudice on the part of the presiding judge.
Frankly, Counselor, I am prejudiced. I think you're a boob.
Judge, I didn't come with this guy. All he said to me during the recess was that we were involved in a desperate gamble for time, even before he heard what I was doing here. I think he's a nut, so I'll plead guilty.
So be it. Public lawyer, your letters have indicated a great interest in Mary Magoon's inn up in Turhan Bay, Maine, and with that in view, we've dispatched Wally Ballou there, and he has this tape recording to play for us now that he made, I think, the other evening.
Last Saturday.
All right, Joe, would you thread up that tape, please? The next voice will be Wally Ballou's.
Next voice you will hear will be that of me, Wally Ballou, 17-time award winner of Radio Diction, speaking to you from the veranda of the Mary Magoon Inn, overlooking beautiful Turhan Bay here on the coast of Maine. There's a goodly crowd assembled here. It's Saturday night in Maine. The sunset, scant hour and a few minutes ago. Mary is in the kitchen at the moment and told me that as soon as we took the air, she has a little radio off the kitchen. As soon as she heard us come on the radio, she would come out chatting with us. Tonight, she is inaugurating the new entertainment policy. She is auditioning
of orchestra that she may hire as a regular feature of the... Here she comes through the screen door now. Hello, Mary.
Willie, hello there. How are you?
Did you hear us on the radio out the kitchen?
Yes, we have a small little radio set out there, and I was listening, and I heard you introducing me, so I hurried on in.
Fine. How does the crowd look to you from here?
I don't know how to judge. I know we only have four people, and three of them are ladies.
How many meals have you served today or this evening?
Well, I think only one is going to eat tonight. The others are just more or less sitting around eating the olives and the celery. I think one is ordered.
You have the 14 waiters standing by that you hired?
Yes, they're all standing by, ready to wait on the customers, providing we have enough.
Is that the salad boy over there?
Yes, that's Nicholas.
Uh-huh.
Nice boy. He's from Callis.
There seems to be a great deal of excitement in regard to this orchestra you've hired. Could you tell us something about that, and will we get a chance to hear them?
Yes, they're all over there. Well, there's four nice boys here in town, and they're lobster fishermen.
Uh-huh.
And in their spare time, they've all studied music, instruments. And there are about 10 of them, and they form this little organization, and they play for all the socials around town, and I thought...
Real local musicians.
Real local Maine musicians.
Uh-huh.
And they're over there now, and I thought that the little music on Saturday night might help.
Then there may be some dancing, I guess, a little bit later.
Well, we certainly hope so.
Somebody else shows up.
He's due to start playing any moment now.
Let's have a little sample of that Down East music then now, shall we?
All right, Vernon. Vernon, would you play...
Hey, yeah.
Will you play some music now for the radio folks?
Okay, then.
Something I don't like to see, those two girls dancing together.
They don't have anybody else to dance with, I feel like.
Well, I know. This is the three girls and one fellow.
That's a swinging group there.
You think they're good? I don't know, really.
They certainly sound good to me.
Well, I don't know. They're just local boys.
I suppose they're more interested in lobster fishing than they are music.
Oh, anyway. Yeah. Well, you can tell that, yeah. What kind of music is that, Walt?
And so, from Mary Magoo's
Girls,
gym,
come on now. Off the floor. Just listen to the music.
Overlooking beautiful Turhan Bay on the coast of Maine, we brought you the music of Vernon, what's his name?
What? Vernon Peabody.
Vernon Peabody, his trumpet, his trombone, his saxophone, his guitar, and his orchestra. And now this is Radio's Wally Ballou returning up to New York.
That sounds pretty good, huh?
Boy, I think she's got to find a discovery there.
I guess Tex is out of luck. When he hears that, he'll realize that he has had it as far as Mary Magoon's in.
Boy, I don't know how she can afford to pay an outfit like that, though. With only three people in the place.
I don't know as they really understand how much they should be paid, you know. I think their primary interest is lobsters.
That's probably true.
Look, if she gives them a free meal, they're happy.
Sure. We have preview time coming up, and what's it going to be for tomorrow, Terry?
Well, tomorrow, you'll hear the sound of a mystery car in just 10 seconds.
Here then is a preview of tomorrow's mystery car sound.
Until then, this is Ray Goulding reminding you all to write if you get worried.
Bob Elliott reminding you to hang by your thumbs.
Bert Parks and Hermione Gingo keep your funny side up every weekday on the CBS Radio Network.
And on KNX AM and FM, CBS Radio in Los Angeles.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.